Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you very much for joining us, Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez, now joined by Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com. What's up, Jeff? How are you?
I am doing well. Almost the end of the NFL offseason. One more day, and we're done with mini camps and everything else, and just thinking about training camps, so I'm getting excited.
Baseball is letting me down, but the NBA playoffs is getting me through this this time of sports. Have you watched any basketball?
I have watched probably about 15 minutes total.
So you didn't watch the Philadelphia collapse last night and the fans turned on the
wrong
team?
The minutes that I saw.
That was worth it, wasn't it? Nothing like watching a pissed off Philly crowd turn on their own team.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I was eating sushi at Fortune Walk around about maybe 8:30, and it was like a 25-point game. They had the game on the corner. I got home, and I was flipping around. It was like, it's a 5-point game now. Like, all right, so I watched the end of it, and Philadelphia collapsed. But all the stars, most of the stars are hurt, right? I mean, so you've got Chris Paul's got COVID-19, Kawhi's out. Who's the other guy I'm thinking of? Well, Jamal Murray hadn't played. Well, he's gone now. The Nuggets are out.
Anthony Davis, Kyrie Irving.
Mike Conley for the Jazz.
Mike Conley. It's just like, man, it's just like a litany of stars hurt. So, I don't know. The Suns, to me, seem like the most intriguing team to watch because I've caught a couple of their games, and they seem to have a lot of fun and got some young guys, Devin Booker and Chris Paul, the old veteran. So, I probably root for them. I watch the finals, but yeah, it's tough. It's kind of, we were talking about baseball. I haven't watched baseball in a long time. I don't know if it's because of COVID and I got out of sorts, or if it's just I'm just not that interested right now.
LeBron James is tweeting, he's all pissed off.
What's he upset about?
They all didn't want to listen to me about the start of the season. I knew exactly what would happen. I only wanted to protect the well-being of the players, which ultimately is the product and benefit of our game. These injuries isn't just part of the game. It's the lack of pure rim rest. Rest before starting back up. 8, possibly 9 All-Stars has missed playoff games, most in league history. It's the best time of the year for our league and fans, but missing a ton of our fave players. It's insane. If there's one person that know about the body and how it works all year round, it's me. I speak for the health of all our players, and I hate to see this many injuries this time of the year. Sorry, fans. Wish you guys were seeing all your fave guys right now. Prayer hands. Crown.
He's got time to talk, though. Plenty of time.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, would he be tweeting this if he's still playing right now?
Probably not.
Like that at all. Is he wrong?
I knew as soon as I read those tweets, he would get super
pissed
off.
Because then he tweeted later saying, told you so. What? Told us so what?
Told you.
He did tell us. No, he's been talking about this forever.
Look, if he told us so, he would have flexed his power and said, we're not starting this season until January. No, seriously. Seriously.
If
he decided to start the season in December. Like, he's pissed off at Chris Paul and the Players Association. He is the most powerful player in the league. If he didn't want to start this season till January, he could have flexed, and this season wouldn't have started till January. And now he's bitching about it because AD was out.
He said all this stuff before the season.
No, find it for me. Find it for me.
Find it for him.
No, when you said all this stuff.
We got an hour.
When you told you, when you say I told you so, you have to say it.
What do you think
right?
about
you don't
what
believe
tweeting?
He said that stuff?
Find it.
I remember him saying it when it happened.
No. Because they would not have started the season, right?
They just do whatever LeBron
and LeBron
wants.
Said, we're not starting. They would have
trust me. Hey, LeBron
he has that much power. Yes, he has that much
you
power.
You better not back down from this.
I'm not backing down from anything. Go read, you know, Chris Mannix wrote a great article about this on SA.com. Go read that.
What did he say?
He said the exact same thing
Chris
I'm saying.
Chris Mannix had Canelo behind against Billy J. Saunders.
Well,
I don't care what he says.
We're not talking about boxing, we're talking about NBA.
Well, Mannix is good, usually.
No, he was right on the
score. You're saying that LeBron didn't say this stuff and is acting like an idiot now.
His actions didn't say that. Okay. No. No. And he wasn't.
But if he said it with his words, he didn't say it.
He wasn't saying it all year. I mean, look, he wasn't. He said it at the end of last season. But I'm telling you.
Don't tell me you like the Lakers anymore. Your dislike for LeBron is greater than your like for the Lakers, and I'm telling you that right now. Is that right?
Him on his high horse is it's annoying. It's
you
really
think
annoying.
He's on his high horse, Jeff, when you hear those tweets?
He's because if you said it first, Jeff. He's got plenty of time to say this
stuff. I
think
Jake knows about a high horse.
That's pretty funny. Yeah.
It was good. It's real good.
All right. So you're saying he said it, but he said it a long time ago.
I don't think he said it.
He didn't say it at all. Okay, well, I don't know.
Because he didn't want to go against
Chris
Paul.
You don't like
Paul,
him. I told you so.
Yeah.
Isn't he like in the players union? Isn't he like a VP or something like that?
Chris
LeBron?
Paul? Oh. I
thought LeBron was pretty high up in the players union.
I don't know.
He's king.
He's the king of the players union. My point is that he has enough power in this league that, look, it's about money. And so you have to make these $500 million were on the table. And they split that with the players. And so the NBA said, hey, we want to start in December. If we don't start in December, if we wait till January, we're going to lose $500 million. And that means you're losing $250 million. And the players said, oh, salaries? Oh,
sign
okay.
me up.
Right. We'll start in December. We'll start in December. So, look, you agreed to this.
That's true.
You agreed
true.
To this.
He agreed to it. He agreed to it.
So stop whining about it. Yes, it sucks. Yes, we wish all the star players were healthy.
Quit your whining.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the I told you so stuff.
Well, my question is, when does it stop now? Because the Olympics are coming up. Most of these players are going to be on the Olympic team, right?
No, most of them are going to be rehabbing.
Who's on the Olympic team now?
Most of them are going to be rehabbing.
Who's sitting over there?
I don't know.
Michael Porter Jr.?
Yeah.
Starting?
Probably.
That's fine. I'll watch it.
Well, no, I'm not surprised LeBron's complaining because he seems to have been complaining for the last, whatever it's been, month about calls, about exits, about everything. So it seems like it's par for the course.
Confirmed to be playing Dame Lillard and Draymond Green. Good start.
That is.
Confirmed to have declined LeBron, Anthony Davis, and Jimmy Butler. So that's all we got right now. We know two guys that have committed and three guys that have declined.
And it starts in a month? Next month?
Sure, why not?
Sounds right.
We get four. We get eight other guys. We'll be all right.
I know the NFL season starts in 84 days.
Sounds good to me.
What about Chris Jones now at defensive end?
He could play in the Olympics, too, if he wants to.
Maybe. That's been the talk of camp right now.
Sure. The last 48 hours?
Yeah, well.
Camp.
He spoke yesterday, and he talked about it, and he said, you know, thank God he's been waiting for this. There have been other guys that have been ahead of him.
But
now
he's
he
not
play
playing there full-time. It's like a...
Is he?
Is that what he's saying?
That's been the talk, that he's going to be predominantly defensive end.
I don't like that.
And because
it's going to be interesting to see how much he actually does. Like, right. What percentage of
play? Okay, here are the different theories, okay?
The end?
Here are
but
the
that
theories.
Was in a 3-4.
So you look at it, the original plan was to go out there and get a defensive end to replace Tano Pastineau and Alex Okafor. Whatever reason, it wasn't working out. And then Jaron Reed became available in their laps, and they signed him. And so they said, okay, now this will allow us to bump Chris Jones outside. We're not going to get the defensive end we want from free agency, but this makes the overall defensive line stronger. So we're going to do this because the opportunity arose for us to sign Reed, and then we can bump Jones out of there. Or it sounds like Jones is, I've always wanted to play defensive end, and now I'm finally getting a chance to, and maybe the Chiefs have been looking. I mean, you can look at it as they're doing this just because they have to, because the defensive end, if you take Chris Jones out of it, the defensive end depth chart is not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. Like, who would be the starters? Who are the guys? The Taco Charlton, Josh Kando, Mike Dana. That's not, along with Frank Clark, that's not good enough.
No.
And so either the Chiefs had this plan where, you know what, let's go get another guy, the best possible pass rusher, in or out. They got Reed, and they bumped Jones outside. They're doing it because it actually is what they wanted to do, or what they were forced to do because they were unable to sign Melvin Ingram or somebody else.
Yeah, well, look, I thought back when they were running a 3-4 that they had more 4-3 personnel, and they just were kind of back when the Bob Sutton years were going on.
And
I thought that Chris Jones could have the potential to play there as a 4-3, and I think he's built more like a 3-4. defensive end if he's going to end up playing there. But what is he, like 6'5", about 290?
I think they list him as 6'6", but yeah.
I think that the benefits of it are that he's athletic enough to do it. You don't know what kind of moves he has out there. Obviously, he's going to be a bear as a bull rusher, but you got to do more than bull rush. 6'6", 310. No, 6'6", 310. Okay, well, that's a pretty big defensive end. But to your point, I don't know what other options they have. And maybe it's a mix and match thing. Maybe it's a matchup kind of a thing. Maybe all three of those guys are out there, him, Clark, and Reed, and are able to figure out who has the best matchup against whom and bounce them around. I'm sure it's going to be part of the equation. I know Steve Spagnuolo likes to get really, really creative with his defensive line, with his pass rushers. They have to find some way to create pressure. That's the bottom line here. You can't keep blitzing. You can't keep sending DBs and linebackers in hopes of creating pressure because they don't have corners to hold up. You saw what happened in the Super Bowl when that was the game plan. A lot of holding, penalties called, and a lot of big plays in the pass game. So, yeah, am I willing to see how it works out? Yeah. Do I love the idea of Chris Jones not playing inside at some point in games? I don't love that. I would like to see it more of being a mix and match, part-time, go inside, go outside type thing. I haven't heard them say it's all going to be full-time.
They're saying a lot. He's going to play a lot out there.
He plays a lot, yeah. I think he's better as an inside pass rusher.
Here's the
I
question.
Think he's more dominant.
Here's the question you asked, and about the team overall, is it better Frank Clark, Derek Nnadi, Jaron Reed, Chris Jones, looking for matchups, moving, you know, mixing and matching? Is that better? And you've got Tershawn Wharton and other guys, Tarkle Charlton and Dana behind him. But is that better than what they had last year with Frank Clark, Derek Nnadi, Chris Jones, and Passanio or whoever else was? Is this defensive line going to be better at creating pressure than they were last year? And also add in hopefully Willie Gay Jr. in the second year and the addition of Nick Bolton, two younger, more athletic linebackers in that front seven. Will Steve Spagnuolo be able to create more pressure with this group than last year?
I don't know. I think the X factor is always going to be Frank Clark.
Like he's the X Factor doesn't come to the games anymore.
Right. Okay. He said he's done. Right.
Sorry. Well, I think Frank Clark has to be the difference maker. He's got to be the he was.
That scares the hell out of me when you say that.
He's got a big contract. They made a big trade for him, but he's got to be the guy that makes a difference
for
you.
But he has not really consistently been that guy since he got here, has he?
No. But they're paying him what they gave him. He's supposed to be that guy. And so you can talk about all these different other scenarios and possibilities, but he's got to play better. If he plays better, everything else gets better.
Can he? Has he been banged up? Like why hasn't the production? And it's obviously he helped him win a Super Bowl. I'm not trying to just pile on him, but in terms of the guy you're talking about,
don't pile on him.
He hasn't in the regular season. He has not been that guy. Why? Like, and can he be that guy?
Well, I think they're a different kind of pass rushers, and he's not like a dominant Von Miller, Chandler Jones, Derek Thomas type guy, beat you with a bunch of moves, beat you with speed. He's more of a relentless, stay after it. And when he has other guys around him, that's even better for him because he's a persistent guy. I mean, I remember, what was it, the AFC Championship game where he kind of ran around and chased Ryan Tannehill around for like 5 minutes and dragged him down on one sack. I think that's who he is. Now, he has been banged up. He's had a lot of mysterious injuries. Yeah. I think there's been times where he's had like some kind of stomach ailment.
Yeah.
And he's had the flu and he's been sick during practice. There seems to always be something happening with him around like November, early December that may be slowing him down as well that we're not aware of. So it could be a physical thing and it could just be the way he plays. But regardless, he's got to play at a higher level. And the problem with Chris Jones playing defensive end full time is I just think that you have to do a lot more things as a defensive end, whether it's sometimes you might be dropping back and on a zone blitz. Sometimes you may be caught up dealing with a running back getting out into the flat and you got to chase people down. He's not the most disciplined pass rusher in the world. We've seen that. He likes to shoot gaps and do certain things. You got to be a lot more disciplined as an outside pass rusher because if you try to, blow by somebody or make a big play, be a hero, guess what? you're playing Lamar Jackson, he's taken off for like 60, 70 yards. And so that's what I wonder about with Chris Jones, is he mentally and to some extent physically capable of handling those other things. We know he can sack the quarterback, but there's more things that come with playing defensive than just sacking the quarterback.
I guess my limited knowledge of what responsibilities really happen on the defensive line, I felt like, man, I guess in my mind, the defensive ends have more freedom to just get up the field, as opposed to like the interior guys are supposed to maintain this gap responsibility and everything, and that's what usually you hear is not really his strong suit on the interior, right? Like he gets up the field instead of maintaining his gap responsibility sometimes.
Yeah, but if you're taking that same approach as far as you have, everybody's got a responsibility,
right?
On a D line, right. So when you're pass person, you just not, it's not a free for all out there.
You don't just get to get up the field.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so what it seemed like it was with some of those edge rushers.
Yeah, and so if you're doing some of that, if you're getting up the field all the time and trying to make the big play, well, guess what? Here comes a screen pass. Mm-hmm. There goes a screen.
They'll
pass.
Exploit that.
They'll exploit that. Yeah, they'll use that against you.
Here's Chris Jones. He talked about some of this yesterday.
Most importantly, I think it can create advantages on this defense along the line of scrimmage. You know, maybe we found an offensive lineman that we like to match up with me and Frank, or, you know, interior guys, and we are able to exchange gaps now. You know, we're able to play left and right. So, you know, it doesn't really matter to me about sides. Whatever Frank's comfortable with, I don't mind rushing left, right. I'll stand up and rush from the middle as a linebacker if I have to. So I'm just excited to learn this position, learn the drops, cover three, cover two drops, man drops. So, you know, I'm still learning and progressing well.
You're talking about right there, the different drops and everything else.
Yeah. Well,
is that what, you know, that, I mean, that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. There are things that come with this. So I'm not going to sit here and say it's going to be a disaster. I'm curious to see how it plays out. Again, I think he's obviously a phenomenal athlete. He's played defensive end and came in the league as a defensive end. He hasn't had to play at this level, but I think it gives you a lot more flexibility if you're Steve Spagnuolo. It gives you some versatility in what you can do. You can actually be more creative with what you have up front. You don't have to rely on guys who can't rush the passer like Derek Nnadi or some of the other dudes who are inside who really couldn't get much of a rush. So
Jaron Reed's the factor here that allows him to do this if he continues to have, like, so three, I think 2018, he had 10 sacks. Then he only had a couple of sacks in 2019. Then last year he had 6.5 sacks. So he has shown he can get to the quarterback.
Yeah, and as quiet as it's kept, I've said this every year. The Chiefs' defense ultimately will dictate whether they win championships or not. In 2018, it was awful. They won a championship. 2019, they got hot in the second half, down the stretch. They won a championship. Last year, they were up and down, inconsistent. As much as they talk about the offensive line in the Super Bowl and Andy Reid and all that stuff, it's like 31-9. Gave up 31 points.
Yep.
They touched Tom Brady once in that game. They had a ton of holding penalties. I mean, so those things matter. So we know they can score points. We know Patrick Mahomes is going to be great. We know that Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill are going to catch a bunch of balls. But can that defense get back to where they were at the end of 2019 when they were a difference maker? And a lot has to do with what's going to happen with Chris Jones and Frank Clark.
We've got Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com in studio back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you very much for joining us, Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez.
You calmed down fast from that NBA rant. But you were getting hot.
It's always, things always used to be better back in the day.
Because they were.
That's how it is. That's just how it is, you know?
Because they were.
I'll get crushed for it. Give me a playoff game in the 80s or 90s.
Strawberry letter.
Yeah, just, you know. That's all.
And a brawl.
Right.
At least one.
It used to be a big deal. He went for 30 last night in a playoff game. Now, like, if you don't.
You average 29.
If you're not hitting 38, 15 rebounds, and 8 assists, like, you ain't doing nothing.
Yeah.
Stats are super inflated. Hey, look, it's still like what Durant did the other night is incredible.
Special.
But I just, you know. I mean, Paul George averaging 26 points a game in the playoffs. I mean, just, you know. It's fine. It's great. It's never as good as it used to be. All right, I'm sorry.
So do you guys feel that way about the NFL? Like in the NFL in the 90s, the scores were a lot lower. We didn't see offense like we do in the NFL now. And it's a very similar. Actually, I think it's very similar because the way they call.
How much lower was it?
The way they call the games. Oh, you look at the scores and the way they throw the ball all over the place in the league now. And the way that you're not allowed to play defense in the NFL. And we talk about all those holding penalties that the Chiefs got called for in the Super Bowl. And, I mean, all the rules are slanted towards the offense in the NFL. Everything's pass heavy. And in the NBA, all the rules have been slanted towards the offense, the freedom of movement, all that stuff. And now everybody's shooting three-pointers all the time. Which product's more entertaining? Now, you look back at the numbers. We talk about it, like all the 4,000-yard passers in the NFL now. It's half the league throws for 4,000 yards. Back in the 90s, it'd be about three, four guys. Over 3,000 yards.
Yeah, but you didn't enjoy it?
I'm asking.
Who was complaining?
It's an honest question. I was
watching the Super Bowl. The Broncos-Packers Super Bowl was on TV on our network a few weeks ago, and I saw a play where Brett Favre threw the ball down the middle of the field to Antonio Freeman, and Steve Atwater came over and tried to take his head off.
Right.
And missed Freeman and like laid out the other cornerback. I forget who it was. I think it was Randy Hilliard or something like that, and they were both – down, knocked out, and I was like, that's great. I missed that part of football. It was probably not the best thing to say in the world we're living in with concussions and everything else, but it was just, nobody was like, oh my God, can you believe that? What he tried to do? It was just, this is horrible. What kind of game is it? They were like, all right, well, Steve Atwater just knocked out his teammate. But it was I think the ferocity of it.
Which was better?
Well, would it surprise you if I told you this, that in 21 years since the year 2000 in the NFL, over that time, it's only increased 0.77 touchdowns per game.
So, like, look at this. So, average points went from, 21.7, let's say, in 2007, 22.8 in 2019, 24.8 last year.
Less than a touchdown average in 21 years. 0.77 touchdowns per game is an increase from 2000 to 2021.
Mm. I mean, I don't know. I remember growing up as a huge Chiefs fan, run and shoot,
mm-hmm.
Warren Moon and the Oilers and the Bills and, you know, the great teams. I thought, there were some fantastic offenses. I don't look at it the same way. I think there's a more dramatic difference between touchdowns. What the NBA used to be to what the NBA is now versus NFL then and NFL now.
I think the NFL, the quality of play has stayed the same. I think with the NBA, it's fluctuated depending on, because you got younger guys coming in, having to learn how to play at a higher level, having to learn how to be a professional. I think with the NFL, you're still getting guys who are coming in who are on average older, playing with teams that have more control over how they play and what they do. What's happened this past offseason notwithstanding, the expectation is that you're going to come in and you have to work as a team. I think of the NBA, you just have so much stuff going on that once you tilt it more towards the offense, you do get more of a diluted product. You do get more of a, this game is all about me, what I do is more important. I think defense still matters. I always preach this, and I know it's not the coolest thing to say, but I still love watching good defense. I still care about seeing good defense. I still think that when Derek Thomas and Neil Smith and that crew was running around this town in the 90s, they were fun to watch. And I wasn't even living here, but it was just fun to watch them get after people. The 85 Bears are still probably the most notorious team in NFL history because of their defense, right? You can't think of a single team offensively that compares to what that group was, because they were just so, they were so many personalities and they were so defiant and so prolific in what they did, created so much chaos that's what you remember about their success.
I think one of the biggest differences in the NFL, I'm not complaining about it, but we see like inflated numbers in the passing game and quarterbacks and receivers, but I don't feel like we see the number of superstar, super productive running backs like we used to.
I agree with that too.
We don't see, you know, Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith, I mean,
Walter Payton,
huge numbers like that, that, you know, because it's a change of philosophy. Back then, you would build teams around running backs, you know, and around the run game, and you've seen it's obviously more effective and more efficient to build your offenses around passing games and quarterbacks. So that's changed a lot in the NFL.
So, Jake, you were talking 20 years back, right?
from 2000 to 2020. So yeah, and so those are just touchdowns.
Because I just looked at it just now. Like last year, there were 12 quarterbacks that threw for over 4,000 yards in the league last year.
But
in 1991, there was one.
But you're looking at yards.
Yeah, he said passing within.
Yeah, but it's all relative. Look at, yeah, running backs was the numbers were crazy, probably. But
yeah, the scoring is what I'm talking about. Straight scoring, you know.
I mean, yeah, that's
What we're talking about. I mean, we're not talking about inflated.
But what about the '90s? I guess is what I'm asking. Like, what if you go back to '91? You know, in that era, what would the scores be in average game compared to what they are now? Because we're talking about '90s basketball versus, you know. Versus this.
Well, I think 20 years is that's before the expansion, right?
Well, to me, like, I guess I would look at it, when was the Super Bowl or when was the playoff game that Peyton Manning lost to the Patriots when the Patriots held all over the field and Tom and
that was 2003.
So yeah, Peyton Manning made a big ass deal about it, complained like crazy, and they changed the way the game was played at that point.
Yeah, but you got to go back. You look at the '90s, like he said, you had run and shoot offense was around.
But that was one team.
A ton of offenses were running. Bill
Buffalo's
offense
was unbelievable.
Buffalo's offense was unbelievable. You had I remember the Lions were as bad as the Lions were. They were the first team to have a 4,000-yard passer, 2,000-yard receivers, and a 1,500-yard rusher in Barry Sanders. That was like 1995.
But look at even how many guys, like you think about like Thurman Thomas, Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith, Marshall Faulk. There was more of an emphasis in building your team around running backs. And like the same comparison, tell me how many 1,500-yard rushers and how many running backs were producing at a level that isn't happening now.
I mean, I guess that to me, that's the same analogy though of like how many centers how many low post players exist in the NBA now compared to back then. You know, like, and I'm not saying one's
better
than the
other. But what's the scoring though?
Exactly.
I think that's the bottom line.
Is the
scoring,
yeah,
not the
yards. You're talking about the difference in how you're getting to the end zone versus the NBA, where now they're shooting more threes and they're scoring more points because of that. It's a more perimeter oriented game.
Well, Jake's saying that from the early 2000s.
I'm saying
to
from
now.
2000. Yeah, I mean.
Okay, so like, what about the '90s? You know, I mean, I'm curious because
I would say
it
the
is
'90s
up a touchdown a game. That
is
a lot.
I would say the '90s. You had
in 20
at least,
years, it's 6.4 points per game is what has gone up.
Yeah, so you had the greatest show on turf was in '99. You had Randy Moss, Chris Carter, Vikings team in what '98. You had, I think, the Niners team that had Steve Young and Jerry Rice that beat the Chargers in 94. They're one of the highest. Some of the highest scoring teams in the NFL history came out of the '90s. The Packers with Mike Holmgren and that crew, with Brett Favre. I mean, there was a lot of offensive explosion in the '90s. Now, if it's just talking about 4,000-yard passers, yeah. There's probably more of those have come since then. But what Steven's saying, you were running the ball more. You were using more weapons out of the backfield. The touches weren't the same. I just feel like, and I think it was harder to score because you had better defenses and defenses could do more stuff.
I'm trying to make sure this is right. I'm looking at season by season points per average points per game. So in 2020, 24.8. Does that sound right? The team's
that's
average,
right? Because there's some bad teams.
So 24.8, and 2019 it was 22.8. So what years are you asking about?
I like the early '90s, mid '90s.
Let's see, I'll go back. 95, 21.5. 96, 20.4, 20.7, 21.3. Now it's 22.8 last year, 24.8.
So that's like per team, basically.
Yeah. So about 2 or 3 points, maybe.
That surprised me. I would have thought it'd be a little bit more than that.
Now, I do think you're going to start seeing within the next decade more of a turn back towards defense because you're seeing different types of defenders showing up out of college football. Now you look at the last few drafts, the kid that came out of Olathe and played at Clemson who went
Simmons.
To Arizona, Isaiah Simmons, the kid who was at Tulsa who the Cardinals also drafted, Zaven Collins. Bill Belichick drafted some guys in New England, a guy in Michigan, Josh Uche, who was like a 230-pound rush linebacker type guy, more hybrid players, what Tyrann Mathieu is now. You're seeing that Jalen Ramsey type guys, you know, guys who are just physical freaks who are playing on that side of the football again. You get more and more of those guys coming around, then you're going to see defenses start to evolve again because once you can match that, I think Tony Gonzalez said it a long time ago before he left Kansas City. We were talking about just guys like him and Antonio Gates and Gronkowski and them taking over the game. And he said someday there's going to be a bunch of guys who are like NBA power forwards playing linebacker in the NBA and really being successful, guys who could be power forwards in the NBA. And now you're starting to see those kind of body types show up. The 6'4", 6'5", guy who's like 230, 240, 250, who runs 4'3", 4'4". Penn State had two of them last year.
Before we run out of time, I wanted to ask you about the NFL and the NFLPA agreeing to updated COVID-19 protocols for training camp and for preseason. And so what was sent out, so fully vaccinated, no daily testing required, mask not required at club facility or during team travel, no physical distancing required in club facility with other vaccinated individuals, no quarantine required after high-risk exposure to COVID, no travel restrictions, no capacity limits of weight room, they can eat in the cafeteria, no restrictions, on and on. If you're not fully vaccinated, testing required every day, mask required at club facility and during travel, must remain physically distant from others in club facility. If you have high-risk exposure to COVID, you must quarantine. Travel restrictions in effect. 15-player limit in weight room. Players must be physically distanced in meal room. May not eat with teammates. Staff must grab and go. No meals in cafeteria. May not use sauna and steam room. I mean,
shaming. Public shaming.
That's yeah. And about. I mean, you're talking about a competitive advantage, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a player that's not vaccinated that has high-risk exposure. He's quarantined, and he might have to miss a game. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're vaccinated and you have higher exposure, you don't have to quarantine. You don't miss nothing.
Yeah.
And so that all that, just what is your reaction to that?
I think it's the right approach. I think if you're running any professional franchise, even in college sports, I would say the same thing. I understand people's rights, and if you don't want to get vaccinated, that's your right. But if you're working within a certain business and we're saying we want to keep this safe and we want to make sure it doesn't get out of control and that we can function at a high level and we need you to do this, get with it. Because to be honest with you, if you're not good enough to be on the roster, that could affect your job.
So I
think it's totally. I think you'll see more guys get behind the idea of it. They may not like it, but...
Well, teams are going to... make them get behind the idea of it. So unvaccinated individuals, including players, also will be prohibited from gathering outside of the club facility or team travel per the memo. This includes gathering for meetings, practices, or training activities unless approved by the NFL and NFLPA. Players who aren't fully vaccinated will be banned from nightclubs, bars, house parties, concerts, etc., with the NFL and clubs allowed to issue fines of a game check up to $50,000 for a first offense, and more thereafter for violating protocol. And again, the major competitive implications here, fully vaccinated individuals exposed to a COVID-positive individual won't be labeled a high-risk close contact and subject to the mandatory 5-day isolation that kept a bunch of players, coaches, and others out of games in 2020.
Yep. So they've stopped short of saying, go get your ass vaccinated. That's
right.
Basically what they've done. They've come as close as you can come to go get vaccinated so we can start playing football again and not have any of this BS that went on last year happened, where we got Denver Broncos out there with a wide receiver starting at quarterback, or teams like not being able to play games for 3 weeks.
If you're a GM or a head coach, you're going to every important player. No, go get
now.
It could cost us games.
Yeah, and your union is behind this as well. We've agreed to this, so we got buy-in from your people. Nate, this is not like a sit around like let's see what happens kind of thing anymore.
Right. Yeah,
Nate Buchady.
You got a business riding on this.
Yeah,
you got a business riding on this, and I don't blame him at all. It's blowing my mind right now. We're talking about the teams in Major League Baseball. They've got some protocols like that where it's got to be at 85% of the threshold, or the whole team has to follow these rules. From what I understand, I think the Royals are not over 85%. So like when they go on the road, none of the players are allowed to go out and do anything because. I mean, I'm wondering what kind of tension that causes in a locker room, in a clubhouse. It's like, man, hey, I want to go out to dinner with my friends, and I can't because you won't get vaccinated.
That's right. My girl's calling me right now, man. She's hitting me up right now.
I can't leave
the hotel.
There's got to be some uncomfortable conversations going on with that, right?
I totally think there are.
I mean,
it's for you, all for one.
And for us, too. Fully vaccinated media will be permitted to conduct in-person interviews with players for the first time since early 2020. Unvaccinated media not allowed in press box, field, sidelines, locker room, or anywhere else.
Well,
that affects your job, doesn't it?
That's my job. Like, I got vaccinated back on April 26th, so I'm good to go. A colleague had reached out to me because they were trying to talk to the Pro Football Writers Association about trying to get that access again to locker rooms and the one-on-one interviews. And I think they were told by the NFLPA, like, you need to make sure people are vaccinated. So this person was going around and asking people. And, you know, I think she was worried about violating privacy laws. Like, look, I'll tell you right up, I'm vaccinated. I'm good to go. And so I hope everybody else who's done it will tell you the same thing. And I respect anybody who does not want to do it as well for whatever reasons they want to do it. But yeah, for my job, I totally don't want to walk into a football locker room and have somebody be uneasy or be responsible for somebody getting COVID or, you know, I don't be blamed for that. And so, yeah, I take that responsibility upon myself to make sure I'm doing my thing the right way so other people can benefit as well. So, yeah, I totally think that I agree with what the league is saying and what the NFLPA is saying, because this is how we put all this stuff behind us, by everybody doing their part.
And you took it upon yourself, but then the NFL followed up and said, let us, we'll go ahead and tell you.
Yeah.
You ain't interviewing nobody in person because you're vaccinated.
That's right.
We're glad you made your own choice, but by the way, you got no choice.
Yeah, you can stay in your living room.
Right.
Where's your card at?
So, like, how would that go over if you go to the NFL and like, okay, I can't do any interviews. I'm not vaccinated, so I can't go anywhere. So,
yeah. I mean, people have legitimate reasons for it, right? Whether it's religious or physical, whatever. I'm not trying to, you know, pee on that. All I'm saying is that if you can do it and you have an opportunity to do it, and if you're working for the NFL or in the media, I think you definitely should go ahead and do it. Because it's, you know, aside from feeling like you, I mean, there was a hospital in Houston, a private hospital that had a big case about this, about telling nurses to get vaccinated, and they didn't want to do it. And there was a big protest, and it went to court, and they told the nurses, if you don't want to get vaccinated, get a different job. You can't work here.
Right.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Susan told me I could sleep in the bedroom again if I got vaccinated. I got vaccinated, and for some reason the promise hasn't been delivered.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Because isn't the couch help your back? I don't think I ever said that, but yeah, whatever. Jeff, it's good talking football with you. We're getting close.
That we are.
Do you want to?
A real.
Because I like to get prepared for next week. Do you want me to have Jake react to more LeBron tweets?
Sure.
Do you like to start your segment off like that?
Sure, sure.
Man, Kansas City likes it.
Love to hear about it. Right. Yeah. Anytime Jake gets up in arms, it's all good. This orange glasses.
He tries to play it off.
The red eyes with the orange glasses.
He is so yellow. He is so internally twisted because he loves the Lakers. And he can say whatever it is. He don't like LeBron, and so he can't. He can't praise the Lakers or be happy about anything without praising LeBron. Then he craps on LeBron. He's crapping on the Lakers.
It's
no matter what he says, it cuts right through him.
Double-edged.
I got one for you, Jake. I just looking at this. That percent, that change in scores.
Yeah.
Of 6 points. It's a higher percentage of the NFL scores has changed than the percentage of scores in the NBA. If you look at the percentage of scoring.
Look at the percentage of scores.
That makes sense.
I'm just saying the scoring is.
Right.
Scoring's gone up more by a percentage standpoint in the NFL than it has in the NBA.
Oh, he got you there.
I don't know. I didn't know that was the argument.
But the point is the NFL is even more awesome now and the NBA is not as good. So there you go.
That's true.
Boom.
That is fact.
Boom! Roasted and toasted.
They made my point for me.
And back in the day, you got Ned Yosted on Sports Radio 810 WHB.